Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Welcome to the Second Age Podcast. We're the Lorehounds. I'm David.
And I'm John.
And we're your guides to Tolkien's land of Middle-earth. And today, we're going to be breaking down the Rings of Power trailer that was just released by Amazon. And to help us do that, we've got Jim and Aaron from Bald Move with us. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Thanks for popping over.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, I'm glad we're able to do it. So strike why the trailer is hot. Or the teaser. I'm sorry, the teaser.
I don't understand what Rings of Power was or Amazon was doing here with that. The trailer, teaser, main teaser, it's very strange.
Nothing means anything in this industry anymore.
No. Not with Jeff Bezos at the helm. Anyway, those issues aside. Keeping in good standing with Bald Move traditions, the first episode of The Lorehounds dropped on Monday and bang, we got an Amazon trailer. That's kind of exciting. Aaron, I know we're going to be covering Rings of Power this season. How are you guys? What's the status with Bald Move? You guys are going to be doing a full episode breakdown?
Oh yeah, we're going to be doing, I don't know if we're going to be doing, cause like we're also going to be doing, the House of the Dragon stuff. And I'm much more the lore master on that side of things, on the Game of Thrones. I had to flush a lot of Lord of the Rings lore out of my brain to make room for the world of Song of Ice and Fire. But, yeah, we're super excited about it. We'll be doing a dedicated podcast, maybe a feedback episode as well, depending on how much feedback we get. But, yeah, I'm pretty excited. I'm particularly excited about this teaser. I thought, be candid, some of the earlier releases left me kind of whelmed. But I thought this thing really felt cinematic in the way that Peter Jackson stuff did, in a way that the other kind of brief teasers that we saw, maybe it's all about color correction or post-processing or just having better shots and more things that had effects integrated. But I thought this trailer looked real good.
Cool. Jim, what did you think of the trailer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as someone who is not steeped in the lore, doesn't really know the story that's going on here behind the scenes, I'm not in there nitpicking, you know, who's supposed to be here and who isn't. So to me, it looks great. I thought, yeah, I couldn't imagine a series that looked more like Lord of the Rings to me because I've seen the movies, obviously. And this feels like it's straight out of those. And I thought it sounded great. I think the music is going to be excellent in this thing. And honestly, if they can get a story to match, then I'm there for it.
Yeah, nice. And John, we had 2 teasers and then this main teaser. How do you see that the 2 other teasers integrated in with this? I mean, I think we saw a lot of the same shots coming out of it, but we saw a lot of new information.
Yeah, I mean, I have so much more confidence on this series now that this new trailer is out, or teaser, I'm so sorry. And one of the biggest things is there's so much first age content that seems to be in there. There seems to be some kind of flashbacks to there that make me feel like they have a stronger grasp on the lore than I had originally thought.
Very cool. Yeah, and then next week, so this is, we're recording on the 14th, the day that the trailer dropped, and then next week we have the San Diego Comic Con, and we know that they're doing some event there as well. Probably a panel with maybe showrunners and some stars. I don't know. We don't think they're going to release any new video material, but I'm sure there's going to be more news rolling out after that, and maybe we'll have some more insights into what the time frame is that they're capturing here for the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that they're calling this deliberately a teaser because there is going to be maybe a 2.5-3 minute trailer that they do of new material that they do release at Comic-Con? Because it feels weird to release so much right on the eve of, because like normally the move is to debut this at the panel, drop it on the internet at the same time, maximum cultural impact. But it also seems wild to do like a 2.5 minute trailer and then another 2.5-3 minute, like, you know.
John and I have been stressing all week, going like, is this a teaser? Is this a trailer? Are they going to do Comic-Con? Like, yeah, it's been driving us a little crazy. And this is a 2.5 minute trailer teaser. So that's usually the length of a trailer.
The question is, will you be back for the actual trailer if they release one next week?
I think we'd have to be.
Okay.
At least a short thing, right? Or, you know, maybe down what was new.
I said you mentioned the first age material, and it's been about 20 years since I've gone through the appendixes or the Silmarillion, any of the letters of Tolkien collection, and having that in there, because I was like, when I saw the two trees, I'm like, oh wow, we're going back into ancient times. And then I saw the Hobbit show up, and I'm like, what the hell? This seems to be kind of like playing fast and loose the canon. But I guess if it is like a flashback, or they're telling parallel stories of, you know, how this all began and why the war started to begin, you know, like establishing the evil person that they're fighting, that makes sense that you would kind of surf between those different timelines.
Yeah, I think that they're going through it with Galadriel's history, because you can see that she's having this sort of confrontation with Elrond where he's like, oh, I've seen enough. She goes, no, you don't know what I've seen, which goes into this deep level of elvish politics that stem from the First Age. And so they probably need to lay a foundation of that lore just to get you to the point where you understand the drama of the Second Age.
And just stick a pin in it, too. We've got a... on our main podcast, we're going to go into some of these details as we release every Monday leading up to the show. So stay tuned to Dug Too Deep and the Lorehounds feeds to get all that information. Shameless plug aside.
Yeah, we're going to have like a chart that you can click on for all the elvish factions. And so that'll make a little more sense after chapter 3.
Awesome.
That sounds interesting with the... possible parallel storylines, because I know a lot of people, I don't know, the audience is very split on this. I think a lot of people who are into Lord of the Rings are like, this could be sacrilege, and a lot of people are like, well, I don't know, it looks great. I wonder if they can find a way to thread that needle.
Well, we've got, what, five, six, how many seasons did they promise us?
I think they're doing 5.
Right, so.
And they said that they have them planned out.
Yeah.
They like know what they're doing, which makes sense because, you know, this is a prequel. We kind of know how it ends because, you know, you see that in the intro to The Lord of the Rings. So the interesting thing they can do is what are they going to bring to life from this period? Because there's really like several hundred years of history that they're condensing here.
Yeah.
So how they do that is going to be a big barometer of the quality.
I'm looking forward to seeing it because, like, in my adult experience, there hasn't been many prequels released that have made me feel more connected to the source material. Like, when the prequels of Star Wars came out, it's not like, oh, man, A New Hope is a complete different light now that I know about the truth. I'm really hoping that this is amazing enough that it does kind of, like, want people... at the end of it, you're like, man, I can't wait to watch Lord of the Rings again because I'm going to know so much more about Galadriel and... the nature of Sauron and evil. I think that would be... I hope this is a prequel that lives up to its predecessors.
Hearing some
the Hobbit movies didn't do it for you? Come on.
We've already had one bloated, fat prequel attempt already, and that was a swing and a miss in my book.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is, I think that when you have a prequel, the issue is how do you create tension when you know that something's going to happen? But what a prequel can be good about is, like, reading the Lord of the Rings after you've read the Silmarillion is a totally different experience, because there's just so much juice there that you kind of gloss over if you read the Lord of the Rings, but you, like, pick up more stuff, more goodness, the more you know about that extended universe. And Tolkien originally wanted to release the Silmarillion with the Lord of the Rings as, like, a companion. And that makes a ton of sense when you look at the final thing. So if we have this to a state where it enhances the Lord of the Rings, I think that people will really like it.
Because that's the gold standard. Like, there were those people out there that was like, Tom Bombadil. But most even your hardcore Tolkien nerds were pretty pleased with the Jackson trilogy, the original.
Yeah, right. For sure. Yeah, it's been interesting to hear some of the little bit of information that's coming from the showrunners and how that they're taking inspiration from the Jackson films. They're not legally allowed to use that material, but they're keeping it in their minds as they're building their own world and then trying to, you know, connect these two train cars of stories together. So I think they're cognizant of that aiming point that they're trying to reach.
They're doing a hell of a job of aping that style, because, like, I'm looking through some of these shots and stuff, and it's like, man, this really does. In even a way that, like, I don't think The Hobbit did, because The Hobbit, you know, Jackson was trying all that ultra-high def, 60 frames per second, and, like, it didn't look as much like the original trilogy as this trailer does. Like, the atmospheric haze and the soft lighting, and, like, it's just, it looks like a real place.
Yeah. Yeah, and to catch that, like, this is a new world feeling, right? And it's still in a infant stage, you know, it hasn't been ruined yet. Yeah, even you catch some of that in some of the shots of the trailer, for sure. The air is fresh and clean. So maybe this is a good segue to switching over and we can start doing some breakdown of the trailer?
Yeah,
sounds good.
Okay, so we open the trailer with a voiceover of a woman talking about a time when the world was young. And then we see a tracking shot of a city harbor, a close-up of a woman looking into the camera, sort of, and then another tracking shot of a sunrise over a city with two trees in the background. John, what are we looking at?
A tree rise.
Yeah. So the trees, it's actually not the sunrise. That's the light from the trees. So those are two trees called Telperion and Lorelin that were the source of light in the world before the sun and moon were created.
Did they, I forget how these trees work. Did they have one that kind of was during the day and then it would kind of like curl its leaves and then a nighttime tree? Or are they both shining and giving the soft, diffuse light throughout Arda?
It would be like for several hours, one tree would shine. And then as that tree was fading, the other tree would start to shine. So there would be like a twilight, there would be two twilights a day, basically, just like a regular day. But I think it was shorter. I'm sorry, it was much, much longer days, but it was like the scale was more even between day and night, I think.
And the other thing is, like, if I remember my Tolkien cosmology right, the original shape of the earth was flat. So these trees were sufficient to light the entire habitable space. Is that correct? Or am I crazy?
Yeah, so there's some debate within the writings, because the whole thing of Tolkien and canon is that he kept revising things until he died, and everything's released now. Like, Christopher Tolkien just put out everything his dad ever wrote. But the one I like to go with is that, yes, it was a flat Earth at this point. And we actually talk about that whole flat Earth versus round Earth, middle Earth theory in, I think, chapter 2 of the Second Age.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screenshot here, and it does. At first, I thought it was the sun shining through the tree, but the more I look at it, it feels like the branches, the leaves themselves, are what's giving off the light.
One other question about this tree is: there's one that's more or less the sun, and one's more or less the moon, or are they both kind of equally bright sun, warm kind of light?
Yeah, one of them is more sunny, and the other one's more moony. It's not like as pronounced as the sun versus the moon. Like, it's the moon's still pretty bright, but there is like sort of a moon quality, I guess, to one of them.
All right, so our next shot we have is a couple of flyovers. We have one showing some people crossing a river, and then another one showing some people hiking through some high mountains. And then we hear a woman singing a sort of stylized folk song about journeying.
Yeah. I don't know exactly where these things are. I think that maybe the one where you see the eagles or whatever bird that is probably the Misty Mountains. But it could also be the Helcaraxe, which is a big word for frozen bridge. It's sort of, you know, the Bering Strait thing where people crossed over a frozen bridge.
The land bridge,
in ancient times. So the Tolkien has a similar thing in his world where when the Noldor, which are a group of elves, came back from Aman, the Undying Lands, to Middle-earth, some of them took ships, and then some people who were dissatisfied with that group, including Galadriel, took a frozen bridge. So that could be what they're doing here.
Well, you mentioned, I saw the caption here, is that the Misty Mountains of the Eagles. Is that a capital E eagle?
Yeah, so the eagles, the big eagles, are controlled by, like, the king of the Valar, who are, like, this like, Greek pantheon of gods. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that could be one of them. It could be just, like, a regular bird. It might just be a flyover.
You said, what's the Minotaurma?
Yeah, so there's a big shrine that is also a mountain on Numenor. So I figure they might be going for that with it, but I think okay. It's probably either the Helcaraxe or the Misty Mountains.
Gotcha.
So something I noticed in both these shots, so the first one where we've got a group of people crossing a river, these people are in parallel lines, and they're all running, and they're all moving in sort of the same direction. It seems very sort of almost military precision to me. And then the mm-hmm. one with the mountain shot, and then, yeah, you can, if you miss it, if you blink, you'll miss it. There's an eagle flying off the cliff. Those people as well are all wearing cloaks, and it looks like they've got maybe weapons on their backs. And they're, again, they're kind of walking almost in a 2x2 formation.
Yeah. The reason I brought up Minotaurma at all was because the eagles, Manwë's eagles, these like holy eagles that are super powerful, they would like fly around this mountain shrine during prayers and during like all these ceremonies that the king is supposed to do. So that could be why it's that, but I it might not be. I don't know.
And the eagles that show up to save the day at the end of Lord of the Rings, the Return of the King, these are literally the same eagles, or are they descendant of those eagles?
I don't know.
We don't know the lifespan of Tolkien's eagles.
Gotcha. Because they're semi-divine. I also think, if I recall, they're semi-divine beings, similar to like Gandalf, like they're angelic kind of beings.
All right. So our next sequence of shots, we have a voiceover of someone describing different races and the various things that are important to those communities. And then we see various shots of forests, mines, and fields. And then we have the scene continues with a Harfort woman, who we're going to talk about what a Harforts are, saying that the Harforts have each other and that we're safe, sort of contrasting these people have this, but then we have that. And then the scene ends with a meteor crashing to the ground. And this is the meteor that they've been teasing us with in the previous two releases.
Meteor Man.
So,
yeah.
Harforts. Sorry, yeah, no, I was going to pitch the ball to you for Harforts. Harfoots.
They seem to be using these things as like primitive hobbits, proto hobbits. In the Lord of the Rings prologue, where Tolkien extensively describes hobbits, Harfoots are mentioned as a subgroup of hobbits. He says that there's three pretty distinct groups of hobbits, and the biggest group that likes to settle the most, that likes to live in holes, like we know, that's the Harfoots. So that seems to be what they're doing here. I don't know if they really called themselves Harfoots that much, or if that was more of what Tolkien called them, and then they're just using that for this because they want to separate it from the Lord of the Rings. But they're adding this in because, you know, hobbits probably existed in the Second Age, but there's not really a story about them. And the biggest issue I have with this is just that if hobbits are so prominent in the Second Age, why would they fly under Sauron's radar for so long? And why would they be able to be secret in the Third Age when Frodo has to take the ring? That's my biggest issue, but they might do it well anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, they could be like background, you know, characters that are mostly separate from the big events of the age, I mm-hmm. would guess. Because I had the same question. If it's one thing that I guess have hobbits around, but actually taking any kind of leading role in the War of the Rings would be kind of nutso. But I don't know. Maybe they're they're playing a little bit of a solo here with this. I don't know.
So when we have the voiceover, the woman, do we know who the woman is? She's a Harfort woman.
I believe it, her name might be Marigold Brandyfoot.
Okay. And she seems, I'm guessing that we'll see more of her in the season. She talks about how the elves have the woods and how the dwarves have the mines. And we see a picture of a deep mine. And then the men have, I forget what she says the men have, but we see a picture of, some people, fields of grain. So we're establishing the primary races, in the world and sort of showing them what's important. And then when she's talking about them, you know, we see some Harfruts dancing in the forest. We see some people on a hillside. And actually, if you on one of those frames, in one of the earlier teasers, we saw two Harfort guys carrying big sort of elk-like horns on their backs. They're actually on the ridgeline in the back of that shot with that person with the whistle.
Hmm. Interesting.
What do we think this is going on with the meteor?
Okay, here's what I hope. I hope it's the Blue Wizards, because there were five wizards like Gandalf who came. The Blue Wizards are the ones who probably came, who may have come during the Second Age. There's like discrepancies in the writings about it, but they're the most plausible who came in the Second Age. And we have like almost no information about them, except that they probably started weird magic cults. And they like there's so much they could do with that, and there's not a lot there, and I would be happy to see them take liberties with it. I hope that it's that. However, as we saw, it looks like the Eye of Sauron when the meteor is coming down. I think that they're just going for Sauron came on a meteor back to Middle-earth after certain events.
It's got big Satan cast from heaven energy down to earth, you know, like this flaming being arriving in smoke and fire. I know, Tolkien would be pissed that I'd made that allegory, so...
All right, in the next scene, we've got an edited conversation between possibly Elrond and Galadriel. And we see various scenes of Galadriel adventuring and facing various dangers. We hear talk of the enemy and Galadriel impressing the importance of what she has seen. There is a lot packed into this little sequence here, John.
Yeah. So I think that this is where we're seeing all these flashbacks, because... there's a ton here. I mean, we definitely see, you know, Tirion, which is this like elvish area in the Undying Lands in the early shots. We also see Galadriel in this like red fuzz that we don't know exactly what it is. I think that that's the first kinslaying, which is this big event we talk about in chapter 3 of the Lorehounds, where her uncle Feanor, goes to town on the other elves that are in Amon, because he's trying to go back to Middle-earth and they don't want to give him their ships. And so it's the first time that elf killed elf, really. And it was like really bad. And so I think Galadriel's, if this is tied to this flashback, is saying like, I know how bad my people can get. So you need to sit down, Elrond.
It looks like literal hell. That if what you're talking about is the first kinslaying, like it's just like magma red elves floating and falling and bisected with spears. I mean, that's war on a scale we've never seen before in this
series. Well, the Noldor who followed Feanor were known as being these like really violent, vengeful people, because there's this whole thing, and we'll talk about that more in our cast, but they made these Silmarils out of the two trees, and the two trees were gone, and Sauron's boss, Melkor, also known as Morgoth, had destroyed the trees and taken the Silmarils, and Feanor is like, I'm going to kill anybody with my Silmarils. I don't care if they're elf, man, I don't care if they're Valar, which are gods. I don't care who it is, I'm going to kill you. He's a bad dude. And that's Galadriel's uncle. And Galadriel followed her a different uncle, on the Helcaraxi, which we saw before, because she saw this whole kinslaying go on, and she's like, I don't know about this. This is a little not for me, you know?
This scene of all these bodies swirling around and somebody impaled on a spear, it looks like there's some sort of tower or central high place.
I think they're in the water.
Really?
I thought so. I thought that they were underwater here.
I Maybe they are underwater, because now I'm looking at it, I'm seeing bubbles. I thought they were like levitating up into that, you know, like they were exploded up into the heavens or something.
Well, the first kinslaying happened on the shore.
Wow.
So that would make a lot of sense if they fall into the water with spears in them. So that's why I think it's that.
Gotcha.
But also, there's other water-based big events coming up, so it could be a flash forward, you know, because we know Galadriel has these like weird visions in the Lord of the Rings and all that. So maybe she's like, I've seen the future. So it could be anything.
Jim, do you have a take on this?
No, I also thought it was some sort of hellscape sky with some of the elves being lifted into it. But yeah, water probably makes a lot more sense there.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Next, we've got, this is a big, so we've sort of hit the halfway of this trailer, and now we're into the rising action of this. I counted at least 27 different shots that they compressed into the back half of this. It's a big montage that sort of brings the trailer into its conclusion. I'll just summarize the narrative. We first hear an elf talking about darkness marching over the face of the earth and the ends of all people. And then we hear somebody, I think it's a dwarf, saying that he's sorry, but their time has come. We hear someone declare that the past is with us all. And then we hear somebody else declare that the past is dead and that we need to move forward. And then we hear and see another dwarf saying that this could be the beginning of a new era. And then that's overlaid over about 27 different shots. So I'm not sure how we want to break this down because it's a lot.
Yeah, so why don't we go through who we're talking about here? Because I can identify most of these people.
Okay.
So the first elf that talks, that's Gil-galad. He's the one who's like, there's a darkness over the land. So that's Gil-galad. And you see him in The Lord of the Rings, where he's the guy who's going to fight Sauron in that intro, along with Elendil.
Hmm.
You also have, you have a shot of Galadriel there. Then you have Tar Muriel, who I think I predicted in one of our episodes, so I'll eat my words now. I thought that they were going to replace her with Isildur's sister, which is a character they made up, but it looks like she's there. So she looks to be the queen regent of Numenor at this point, so she's in charge.
But she doesn't say anything. We're not...
She doesn't say anything, but she's...
Wait, are we doing the shot breakdown? Are we doing the shot breakdown, or are we identifying the narratives?
So we can say who talked first. Yeah. So the person who says their time is done.
Yes,
that is probably Durin the Third. He's a dwarf king. We know we have Durin the Fourth, his son, and I think that what they're setting up is that Durin the Third is the current king of Khazad-dûm, which is, it becomes Moria by the time of the Lord of the Rings, so it's like a fallen kingdom at that point. But at this time, we're going to see active Khazad-dûm with the dwarves running a kingdom in this mountain. And that's right next to a big elvish city, which is where the rings are involved.
You labeled a lot of these locations I had thought was Rivendell as Lindon. Is that what they called Rivendell in the Second Age, or is that a distinct elvish city?
So Lindon is a region
that I've never heard of.
But it's the Grey Havens are part of Lindon. You know, like where they sail off at the end. Rivendell doesn't exist at the beginning of the Second Age. It's founded sort of as a response to a lot of these events, so I don't think it exists yet. I think we're probably going to see it being founded.
I was going to say, you also identify like a bunch of Numenor locations, and I really like, when I was looking at the ships that are sailing into this city, I like how they've got that seabird motif, like from Gondorian, like honor guards. You know, they got those big wings on their helmets, and like Aragorn's crown had those big wings. These are Aragorn's ancestors, and the ships cut that very similar. They've got these really strong batten sails, and they look like a bird's wings stretched up, ready to go in flight. I thought that was a really cool detail.
Did you see on the back of the wings, there's like a sun pattern?
I didn't make that out. Yeah, there's like no. Oh, actually, I wasn't sure if those were shadows, but yeah, I can kind of see like the rays of a sun coming out.
Is that a symbol that we know, John?
I don't recognize it. It could be. I'm wondering if it's a way that they're going to differentiate like the factions of Numenoreans as things get a little more heated.
Mm. Could that be a tree? The white tree imagery?
We do see a woman wearing a helmet with big spikes in one of the production stills.
The white tree question first. It could be. I wasn't looking at it. Maybe. And then David, what did you ask?
I said in one of the production stills that came out yesterday, there's a woman sitting on horseback in front of a line of horses, and she's got a really spiky helmet that reminds me of this sun logo on the back of these sails.
Yeah, I think that was Tarmuriel again. So they're setting her up to be a big character. And then you also have responding to the last thing that we talked about with Doran talking. We had Elendil sitting around a table saying, you know, the past is the past. And we have Arondir saying, Arondir is an elf that they made up for this. And he's saying, the past is always with us. So those are the other two people that we're talking before I forget to answer that. Arondir is a Sylvan elf, which is a faction that's not explored a ton. They live in Lothlorien mostly in the Third Age, where we see them in the Lord of the Rings, even though Galadriel rules them and she's not a Sylvan elf. So they're basically like these wood elves. And what they're doing with Arondir is they've confirmed that he's in an elf-human relationship, which is a very rare thing in Tolkien. And so I think that they're just trying to go for that Aragorn Arwen thing.
They are too late for Beren and Luthien. Yeah, yep. Right? Because that's first stage. Elrond is one of their descendants, yeah?
Yes, he is. And
you say it's a rare thing, but it seems like a lot of Middle-earth history hinges around those unions.
Yeah, the biggest ones are Beren and Luthien, and then Aragorn and Arwen. And Arwen's supposed to like be in Luthien's image. So it's supposed to be this very special thing, which is why people get a little funny when they start adding new ones. Especially people hated in the Hobbit movies when they added that like Hobbit elf romance.
Elf romance.
Oh my
yeah.
God, was mm-hmm. that bad?
So one of the next coming up scenes we have here is a couple of people under a tree at some sort of moonlight and then looking out over the water.
Yeah, so that looks like Gil-galad and I think Elrond, and they are chatting. I think that's where they're having that conversation, like, oh, there's a darkness along the land. So we'll see what they do with that. That's probably somewhere in Lindon.
And then we move on and we see a man, maybe a king of some kind, also talking.
Oh, yeah. That's Gil-galad.
Okay.
That's Gil-galad again.
All right. And then we get a horde of creatures storming a battlement.
That looks like orcs to me. I'm 99% sure that's orcs because they have shown some like lady orcs now, so they're going with that now, and I think that's why they look a little skinnier and a little less orky than they did in the Lord of the Rings.
Are they already set up shop in Mordor, or is that to come? Because I just felt like this land looks a little blighted, but it could just be nighttime.
Yeah, so Mordor becomes a fortress in the Second Age, but orcs have been around for a while because they're around in the First Age. They were created sort of by like corrupting elves. That's at least one explanation for their origin. But yeah, so Sauron's getting cooking in Mordor at this point.
Next, we see a shot of a bunch of white birds circling around a boat on the water. And we've definitely seen these birds in some of the other cityscapes.
Yeah, I'm wondering what this is. I don't know if that's a Numenorean ship or an Elvish ship. They're wearing white, it looks like. So I think it's elves.
This boat looks a lot. Yeah, I was going to say, because it doesn't look... The Numenoreans had a very heavily battened sail pattern, and mm-hmm. this looks a lot like the boat that takes Frodo across
yeah.
the water at the end of the Lord of the Rings.
That'd be a nice tie-over if they took that style, stylistically took that inspiration.
Yeah.
Then we see Galadriel, followed by another woman, a noble woman.
That's Tarmuriel.
A Harfoot woman. And then some scraggly looking guy who seems to be the shot is very fuzzy. So we get four quick shots of people reacting to various things happening around them.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely got Galadriel there, and something bright has just sort of gone off.
Yeah. I think they're looking at the trees there. I think that's what that's going to be.
And we got this Aqualung looking guy here. Is that Meteor Man or is he somebody else?
Oh, I have no idea. It could be.
Well,
I just want it to be a blue wizard. Give me a blue wizard. That's what I want. That's my speculation. It's a blue wizard or nothing.
All right, next we see a an elf. Is that Elrond or Celebrimbor? I couldn't quite tell. Being escorted by some dwarves in what looks to be Khazad-dûm?
Yeah, so I think that's Elrond. The thing is, so Celebrimbor is an elf that he forged the three elven rings. And he runs the city right next to Khazad-dûm. And so that's why, remember in The Lord of the Rings, they're like, oh, there's this door with Elvish because they used to go in and out. So that's why there was that door that had the Elvish password. So I know Elrond helps out with that city at some point. So I think it's Elrond going there maybe for help because things start to go down in that city. But it could be Celebrimbor too because it's a little vague.
All right, then we've got a dwarf king speaking the line about he's sorry, but you know somebody's time has come.
Yeah. That's probably Doran the Third.
Okay. Do we know whose time that he's talking about, maybe? Any guesses?
No idea.
Okay. Let's see here. We've got then a quick cut to a dwarf breaking a big stone with an axe.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with that stone thing. It looks like it's just more exposition on Khazad-dûm.
Okay. We get some scenes from Frozen Waterfalls, which we've seen sort of some of these bits before. And then we get a scruffy man in what looks to be like an audience chamber or a throne room of some kind.
I think that's probably the Numenorean throne room.
Uh-huh.
That's Halbrand, I think we've identified him as with the actor, which is they made him up. He's not canon, so who knows what they'll do with him. He looks very Aragorn-y.
He does look Aragorn-y.
We get a close-up of an elf named Arendir, and he speaks that line about the past is always with us.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he have a face on his chest? It's very Children of the Forest from Game of Thrones.
You know what it reminded me of was the Green Knight a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Brooch sure. is very much calls back to the brooches that Sam and Frodo had in Lord of the Rings. Yeah,
the cloaks for that matter.
Yeah, well, he's probably living in Lothlorien at this point. So that makes sense why that would have that connection.
And then we get a scene of a cavalry charge across some fields below some snowy mountains.
I love that they zoom in on the horses. They're like, oh, yeah, we did horse armor.
Right.
You get ready.
If you look at the screenshot, too, it looks like Galadriel at the center of the formation there.
I noticed you also labeled them Numenoreans. Why that instead of some kind of proto-Rohirrim? Because I looked at this, like, those head tassels and scale armor kind of scream Rohan to me, but I don't know if that's right for the timeline or whatnot, and I'm also not super conversant on what the Numenoreans rode into battle.
Yeah, the Rohirrim came from the north sometime in the Third Age, so, I mean, they could change it for the canon and this, but that's the canon. Numenoreans have like big bonds with horses. They supposedly could like call them and be like, hello horse, come back to me, like in when they were in Numenor. So I think it's probably more likely Numenoreans than Rohan, but they could change it.
Interesting. Because they showed the previous one, they showed the men in the fields of wheat. Those seemed a little bit rustic for Numenoreans, so I thought maybe they would have like other men besides the Numenoreans are, they think a lot of themselves.
Yeah,
a lot of pride.
The Numenoreans have like superpowers, basically. Like they live longer lives, they're stronger, they see better, they all this stuff, because they helped the elves against Morgoth, which was Sauron's boss in the previous age. But they end up for a long time, and we get into this in the Second Age deeply, so I won't go too deep into this. But they end up for a long time being these sort of like teachers and helpers among the normal men in Middle Earth, and that's when they start trading with them. And eventually they get a little nastier towards the people in Middle Earth. So I think that we're going to see like this changing relationship between the Numenoreans and the regular men.
All right, then we got a quick couple of cuts. We see a couple of Harfoots hugging, and then we see probably Galadriel on a raft in the middle of a storm. We've seen some shots of this before. And then a large ship crashing through some waves with a man standing on the deck of the ship.
Yeah, so that looks like Isildur. That's the actor who plays Isildur.
And that's when...
So for some reason, he's on a ship.
Do you think that's when they're leaving Numenor? They're escaping to Middle-earth?
So that's the thing. I thought that they were going to go very close to that kind of event at the beginning of the series, but I think they're backing up farther. Because the fact that Tar Muriel is queen means that they're starting pretty early in this timeline of Numenor.
And Isildur is the guy, you'll recall, that just couldn't throw that ring in the crack of doom. Elrond wanted him to real bad, but he just couldn't do it.
Do we got any theories about why Galadriel might be being tossed about on the sea in a storm?
I have no idea.
Okay.
That's new to me.
Definitely some show invention stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Being struck by lightning, almost like something divine is... She's trying to get somewhere, and something doesn't want her to.
Yeah. There's a big, totally. Yeah, you can see that big lightning strike right on the side of her raft there.
Then she's got her Dolores dress on in the next scene.
Yeah, she's riding
riding the horse,
across the beach with a city in the background, and then we got a close up of a man speaking about the past. And this man, I don't recognize, but you've got a theory.
That's Elendil. That's the actor who plays Elendil.
Okay.
So that's definitely him.
And Elendil, I know we go into it in the podcast, but quick, he's the father of Isildur?
Yeah, he's Isildur's dad. He's the guy who gets into that fight. He allies with Gil-galad, and he fights Sauron at the beginning of the Lord of the Rings movies.
Gets his sword shattered.
Mm-hmm. Narsil, he has.
Does he look old enough to be Isildur's father? Do we think this might be a flashback to an earlier time?
I think he looks old enough.
Or is this his Numenorean blood? He just looks good for his age.
Well, that is the thing. Like they, especially when they're like more faithful to the Valar and they're more faithful to the elves, they only get old in the last like 10 years of their lives, even though they're living like 300 years.
Yeah, reminder, Aragorn throughout the Lord of the Rings film was like 85.
Yeah. And he's faded.
So, yeah.
He's not like at the peak of Numenoreans.
Yeah, he's like the last vestiges of this magical blood in the
How do you think they're going to communicate this stuff to people like me who aren't familiar with the age scales here?
They have 10 hours instead of 2 minutes.
Right? Like, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. A series of flashbacks might do it, something like that.
I'm guessing they're going to use people like Galadriel, Elrond, and Isildur, the people that you at least saw in the movies, and they're going to have some kind of visual, musical, and flashback motifs to draw those connections. Because I think that's what people are going to, like, if you're a fan of the movies and you haven't read, that's what going to be your life raft of, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like they're your Obi-Wan in the prequels. You know, I know this guy. Sure. I can make connections based on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's...
Well, there's a whole thing... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's amongst the fandom, I think that's a big question people have is because we're taking thousands of years of history and compressing it into 5 seasons. So how are they going to do this? And then obviously Amazon wants to get a nice big audience and they really want this to be a Game of Thrones scale show for them. So yeah, how are they going to get you, Jim, to be invested in the show? I think a lot of people have that question.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing with Numenoreans, the pull of this story is that this fear of death and this like fear of the unknown is sort of the driving force behind their corruption. And so if you want to go to the next shot where you see Pharasone, the older man standing in this sort of like Greek Mediterranean plaza, that's another Numenorean. And he's the guy who we said is going to be like, hey, let's get Numenor back where it was. You know, let's bring this place back. We can be better than the elves and we can be better than the Valar. And whatever this regime is doing is terrible and we should just do our own thing and ride to glory. And look how much older he is, because he's like clinging to life here. He's saying, I'm not going to go down. So I think that's a big thing that they're doing with this. And that's where the central tension comes from in this story.
Because originally, just for people that, I think they briefly touched on this in the movies, but the creator of the cosmos, the Tolkien cosmos, there's a distinction between elves and men. The elves are eternal, undying. Men are given the gift of a brief life, and then they die, and then they go to some kind of like heaven, I think, existence that's shut off from the elves. But as the men got more established in their power and were attracted to those things, that gift, that temperance, was started to be seen as the doom of men. So like what was originally supposed to be a gift became a perversion to them.
Right, and that's because Sauron's boss, Melkor, who takes the name of Morgoth, he sort of puts this fear of death in them. Because at first they're just like, well, nothing happens when we die, maybe, or maybe something good happens, but we'll trust Eru Iluvatar, the creator god, to do the right thing and put us somewhere. The elves, we know, go to the Undying Lands when they die, like their being sort of goes there, and the elves have the lifespan of creation. So like when the world totally ends, when the clock stops, elves cease to exist, but they have the full lifespan until then. However, men go somewhere they don't know. We don't know where they go. We don't know where dwarves go. And they're supposed to just trust in this gift of Eru Iluvatar. And their gift is that they get to leave creation and they're not tied to it.
This is a neat, again, not that it's allegory, but I can't help but draw comparisons between Adam and Eve, you know, being deceived by the serpent about the nature of the tree of knowledge. It seems like they're, again, not an allegory, but there's definitely parallels you can draw there.
Absolutely.
Tolkien the Catholic.
Absolutely. Chapters 1 and 2, we talk a ton about like the fear of death and how that was twisted by Sauron and his boss. And so I think what they're setting up to be a really central tension in this series is Elrond only saw like the tail end of the war with Sauron's boss. And he's kind of assuming, hey, everything's pretty good now because we beat that guy. Because they beat the big bad at the end of the first age. He's gone now. He's in the void. He's not coming back. And Elrond's like, all right, everything's good now. Put down your sword, Galadriel. Relax. And Galadriel's like, you don't know what I know. Like, Sauron was just as bad as Melkor, even if he was less powerful. We gotta deal with whatever's going on here. And so I think that's what's going to be one of these conflicts.
So let's jump ahead a little bit in the trailer here. We see a dwarf holding some sort of gem or a stone. And then we see a group of what I think are elves pulling out their swords, and it looked under a starry sky, and it looks like they may be swearing an oath of some kind.
I think that's the oath of Feanor,
okay,
which I brushed upon before, but that's where the Noldor, or at least most of the Noldor, swear an oath to like kill anybody who gets in the way between them and their Silmarils, and that's like kind of the downfall of the Noldor in the First Age, and that's why there's not so many left in this age. And Galadriel sat that oath out, so she's pretty unique among the Noldor. And so that's why she's probably having this flashback.
And then we see a couple more things, but then we jump to this fiery meteor crash, potentially. And as we pan back, we see a central figure in there and sort of the flames sort of drowned out and in almost a very eye-like pattern. So a lot of speculation about Meteor Man here.
Yeah, I think that they're at least telegraphing us that it's Sauron. I don't know if it really is. Maybe they just want us to think that. So, because Sauron's busy in this age. There's a ton for him to do. I don't know of any story where he comes in on a meteor, but they could potentially do that, I guess.
There might be a way that you're right about both things. That, because we know that we're not the Ishtari that the wizards sent as a response to Sauron fucking around. So, like, it could be that Sauron is kind of thrown from heaven or, you know, comes down in a meteor. And then in a later scene, we see the arrival of the wizards in a similar fashion. And that would kind of, you know, explicitly give you a hint of the cosmos that these people are coming from a place that's above, you know, the humans, elves, dwarves, you know, like just with this visual language that they're all coming from heaven, essentially.
Yeah. So the Valar, and we talk about this again in the Second Age, but the Valar are super like nervous about divine intervention at this point because a lot of things have gone on that we'll see in the show, so I won't spoil. But if you want to hear the spoilers, go to the Second Age podcast. But the blue wizards are the ones who may have come in the Second Age as a response to the forging of the Rings of Power. And then the other wizards definitely came in the Third Age as a response to, like, we think Sauron's still around. Let's set up these free peoples of Middle-earth to have some help.
Huh. I did not know that they came. I thought the... I'd always thought that the blue wizards had came at the same time. They just had, for whatever reason, gone off the path of their purpose, and they were, you know, essentially wizards not seen in these movies.
Yeah, there's two different versions. There's one where everybody comes at the same time. There's one where the blue wizards come early. So I'd be fine with either one, but I'd rather them not have like Gandalf show up in this because that would be kind of silly to me.
You don't think they get? Because that was one of my questions. You don't think late in the game, like, you know, season 4 or 5, we'll see Gandalf or Saruman?
I kind of hope not. I think that it would feel a little fan fiction if they did that, especially because they weren't involved. And I think that this whole thing is the story of how men and elves work together to solve this problem without so much divine intervention. And I would feel a little disappointed if we had two rounds of Gandalf solving the problem, and then also somehow he takes forever to figure it out in the Third Age.
Mm. That makes sense.
All right, the last shot of the trailer is a group of Harfords walking through a field and heading towards some far-off mountains. And then we've got the sort of the rejoinder of the song that we heard at the beginning, sort of a stylized folk song.
Is that an actual song from the books? Because I know that's what
I don't know.
Tolkien loves songs. And I love skipping them when I was a teenager reading, and it's like, oh, italicized text, page. But yeah, so I'm not the person to ask if these are actual elvish or mid songs of men, but I wondered, because there's so many you can choose from.
Yeah, I'll have to do some more research on that. But the thing with the songs is that that's where a lot of this stuff is from, because the First Age is not really discussed in detail in the appendices, which is where a lot of this material comes from. Songs contain a ton of stuff. Like, the story of Arendil, which is the story of the founding of Numenor, is a whole song that Bilbo sings in Rivendell in the book. So that's where they're getting the rights to any of this, because they don't have the rights to the Silmarillion, and they don't have the rights to anything else besides The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. So the songs, I'm glad that they're there, even if you are skipping them, because otherwise we wouldn't even get this show, probably.
Cool. All right. It's a dense trailer. There's so much in here. And I don't even know if this is all just first season stuff. I mean, if there's some of these things are first season, I would be really surprised. I mean, I think some of this maybe seeds out a little bit.
Did they record, like, or did they do like a Peter Jackson thing where they film multiple seasons at once to then go do a whole bunch of post-production on? Or are they kind of shooting these season at a time?
I think that they're doing a season at a time, but I know that they gave them like a tremendous budget for this first season just to like get everything set up. And I know that there's funky stuff because I think that they got ousted by James Cameron from New Zealand from like the normal like areas of Middle Earth that they usually film in. So they only got to film this season in New Zealand. The rest I think they're doing in like Ireland and England and things like that.
Oh, that blows. How did James Cameron get him kicked out?
Because he's making Avatar forever now.
And he's taking all of fucking New Zealand, both islands?
I think just, like, the areas that they shoot in are the same areas that Avatar takes advantage of,
Damn.
Which is insane to me.
Damn, driving the hobbits off their ancestral lands. Jesus Christ, James. bad juju there.
Jim, what are you thinking?
I think they should just shoot it in SoCal or Georgia like everything else shoots. No problem, right?
In the hills of California.
Yeah.
Do you think, are you feeling more lost now, Jim, or are you...
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. But we'll get there, you know. If the show's going to be any good, it's going to bring people like me along by the hand. And I'm not going to need to go read a bunch of tomes before we get into this.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, it's probably a lot like Game of Thrones was, where it's like you see a trailer for season 5, and if you've read the books, you're like, oh, I know where all this is going. And if you haven't, you don't, but like you will by the time the season's over. At least that's the hope. And that's the experiment. Like, can they make people care about this as much as people cared about The Lord of the Rings? Seems like they're going to give it a good, solid try.
Like you, I was pretty underwhelmed at the first couple of teasers, but this trailer makes me feel a lot better about what they're going to be laying out.
This looks so much better than particularly Wheel of Time, because that's what started scaring me. Some of the early teasers felt cheap in the way that a lot of stuff I saw Wheel of Time, even though they spent a ton of money on that too. This feels like, okay, I can see where the dollars went on the screen.
I think that they have the potential to do a lot good here. I hope that they take it slow, because this is really dense. And I'll say that we went through a lot of things in the abstract here. So I'm referencing characters from across thousands of years. So if this feels daunting, again, go back to the prologue of the Second Age podcast. Follow us along. We're going in order. We're breaking it down element by element. And it'll start to put it together as a bunch of puzzle pieces rather than this like bucket of fun that we just had.
And also another good analogy is, like, there was quite a bit of material from the Second Age in the original films, in the terms, like, the first prologue of the movie, in terms of the flashback to Smeagol and Deagle. But that was such a small fraction of the overall tale. It was just background information to kind of get you into the world, and it's not like you had to know who Isildur and, you know, these other characters were, just enough to know, like, well, where did the ring come from and why did this all start? And I suspect a lot of this stuff, flashback, like, I don't think we're going to have episodes in the First Age. It's going to be more like similar to the prologue of the film. Why do people care about these things so much? Why is this stuff happening? And, you know, the prologue for Lord of the Rings was pretty lengthy, but it was still a fraction of the over. So I guess I'm not as intimidated as the thousands of years, because I feel like it's mostly going to take place in a pretty confined period of time with a bunch of prologue type flashbacks to make you understand why you should care.
Yeah, you basically got a central conflict with Numenor, you've got a central conflict with the elves and the forging of the rings, and then you have a central conflict of taking down Sauron. And those are your three pillars of this series, I think. And as long as you can wrap your head around that, you'll be fine. The rest is details.
And you'll have us along for the ride, hopefully doing some lore contextualization after Jim and Aaron break down their episodes on the weekly basis on the weekly podcast. And then we've got the Discord, and we've got a whole channel set aside just for Lord of the Rings, and John and I are there pretty actively. And there's a lot of good fan action on our Discord right now around this. So it's been buzzing today. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Any other thoughts, or should we wrap it up here?
These are way more thoughts than I had watching the trailer, so I'm glad to talk it through with you guys.
That's our calling card, the Lore Hounds, right? So yeah, pretty excited. Guys, thanks for coming over. We appreciate you spending a little time with us.
No, I'm glad you guys are putting out the supplementary material. I'm enjoying those. I hope other people are subscribing to the Second Age and the Dug Too Deep. That's where all this action is going to happen during the season. And you guys got a whole series of stuff that's leading up to that launch on September 2nd. So if you want to get more of that lore in under your belt, please subscribe and sign up for the Second Age podcast.
All right, I think we'll leave it there. Jim, Aaron, John, thanks everybody. And yeah, we'll see you on the next episode.
See ya.
The Second Age podcast is produced by the Lorehounds and published by Bald Move.
You can send questions and feedback about this podcast to secondage@baldmove.com. For more Rings of Power content, subscribe to Dug Too Deep on your favorite podcast app.
Ad-free versions of this and all other Bald Move podcasts can be yours by going to patreon.com/baldmove. Check the show notes for reading recommendations and more info. Thanks for listening.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.